Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Grey's Academy, the world's finest, handsomest, most beautiful hosted podcast relating to Grey's Anatomy and the entire world. My name is Carmen.
And my name is Kelsey, and it is yet again a beautiful day for a podcast. And I'm not dying anymore.
Hooray! Were you dying?
Yeah, I was vomiting,
that's right.
Remember?
Literally last week. I remember that now.
Yeah, it was a good time.
I forgot that, actually. So I feel a little bit bad. I don't feel terribly bad, but I do feel
you
bad.
You normally don't. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm incapable of actually feeling bad. And
yeah.
That's not true. I have a lot of emotional intelligence and a lot of empathy. But
he's not.
If I sound any different to you guys, which I have it on good authority that I already sound really, really good. I
sound good, but
switched,
it's the same.
No. I switched back to my original gold microphone. I was using a different one for a while just because I had this one. It was left at church for some time, and I had forgotten to take it home every single week, but I remembered this week to take it home. And here we are, and we are back.
Okay. Grey's Anatomy.
Wait, before we do this, I have a question for you.
What?
Did you ever get Zoas, like you said you were going to get Zoas?
No. Because they don't have them at Target.
Oh, okay.
And that's like the only place I've been recently. As I didn't want to, but I went to Costco, and I just didn't want to commit to the big pack before I tried any.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay. That's all right. I forgive you. Anyways, go on. Tell us the stuff. This is a song. This is a movie. this is a show.
This is a song that never ends. You ever watch Lamb Chop growing up?
No, but I've eaten a lamb chop. Okay, wait, hold on. Did you ever watch Bananas in Pajamas?
Yeah, Bananas in Pajamas coming down the stairs.
Yeah. Did you ever watch Timmy the Tooth?
No. Is that a real thing?
It's a real thing.
Are
Jessica
you
has never...
of- Fairly Odd Parents?
No. Not
My shiny
Timmy
teeth
Turner.
And me.
No. Not Timmy Turner. Timmy the Tooth.
I don't feel like
it
this
was,
is real.
It's real. It's real. It's a real show. I showed this to Jessica. She had never heard of Bananas in Pajamas or Timmy the Tooth. And I feel like that's one of those memes waiting to be made of. If she doesn't remember who this is, she's too young for you. But
I think maybe that was just like your two. Was it PBS?
I don't know.
Oh my
remember,
God, this is nightmare fuel. Holy shit. This is terrifying, Carmen. Oh my.
Yo, I used to watch that as a kid.
Put this on television. Oh
I don't know, but I
God.
Watched it.
The Puppet Tooth and his pal Brush Brush. Oh my God. Live in Flossmore Valley. I'm fucking done.
I'm telling you. I just, if you are listening to this podcast, and
you can watch it now on Peacock, guys.
Yes, you can. I'm going to go watch it with Marlo tomorrow.
Don't. She's going to have nightmares. Oh, it was on Nick Jr. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a Nickelodeon show.
I have no recollection of this. These puppets are terrifying, though. Michael and I were talking about Zaboomafoo. That was good TV.
Zaboomafoo was dope. I'm trying to think of what else.
Arthur is the shit.
Arthur slaps.
Franklin. Hey, it's Franklin.
The original Blue's Clues.
Yeah. Obvi. Yeah.
Anyways, all right, Grey's Anatomy. We're a Grey's Anatomy podcast.
Sometimes we have nostalgia.
And sometimes we're a Bananas in Pajamas and Timmy the Tooth podcast. Next week, it's all about Speed Racer.
Oh, is it though?
No, okay. But it is all about, I'm trying to think, was there another random, is there anything else that's like random from our childhood that you can unearth for nostalgia in the next 3 seconds?
The big comfy couch.
Big comfy, I was never a big fan. I preferred
Teletubbies.
No, not Teletubbies. Although, have you ever heard of the Oombas?
Yeah.
Those are terrifying. The Oombas were like Teletubbies on crack. No, I was going to say the PB&J Otter. That was my jam.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, PB&J Otter is good.
No pun intended.
Did you watch The Weekenders? I feel like every time I ask anybody about The Weekenders, no one knows what that is.
I don't know The Weekenders. Are you thinking Codename Kids Next Door?
No. You know what show I hated though was Ed, Edd n Eddy.
Oh, my gosh. That was the GOAT. Oh, yeah, my gosh. My favorite show growing up.
No.
Ed, Edd n Eddy was... You know what was overrated? Hands down, the most overrated kids show of all time? Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, Scooby-Doo's fine.
Yeah, overrated.
I don't hate it. It's fine.
Anyways, this is...
Okay, Grey's Anatomy. Sorry, guys.
Turn to our Patreon content because maybe this will be a real episode sometime. We got this.
This is the fifth episode of the fourth season.
Episode five? I just watched episode six.
No, you didn't.
No, you're right.
You would know, I feel like, if you skipped this episode.
I would. Sorry.
Episode five of the fourth season. The 66th episode overall. And it is called Haunt You Every Day. And that's a song.
Haunt You Every Day is a song by Michael Myers and Jason and Freddy, all of the scary guys. They are coming to haunt you every day. Just kidding. It's by Weezer. This song is off of the album Make Believe, released May 10th, 2005. This particular song, Haunt You Every Day, did not have any charting, but I will say it's just okay. This song, Weezer is a band that I'm a fan of, and I think basically any 90s kid knows Weezer from all of their bops in the 2000s. Excuse me. But this song, just going to quote a couple of the lyrics here. So the chorus is, "Oh, so alone in love, so alone in love. I'm going to haunt you every day, haunt you every day." Simple, but there's one verse specifically where it's, "I am gonna kill when I need a thrill, eaten at the heart till I've had my fill. When will my stupid learn fire's gonna burn? Think of consequence, then you move when it's your turn." Diabolical, dark, and something other starting with a D I can't think of.
Dangerous.
Diabolical, dark, and dangerous. The triple D's of D's nuts. And
okay.
The album itself did not have any high charting, but the other songs from this album include Beverly Hills, which obviously we all know that. That's the one.
When you think of Weezer. Beverly Hills!
Yeah, that's the one.
Wait, they did a really good cover... on a Disney, did they do a cover of a Frozen song? You keep doing your thing. I'm
Panic at the Disco. Brendan Urie did Into the Unknown.
I know.
Okay,
that's not what I'm talking about.
While you're pulling that up, the other songs on the album were Perfect Situation, This Is Such a Pity, Hold Me, Peace, We Are All on Drugs, The Damage in Your Heart, Pardon Me, My Best Friend, The Other Way, Freak Me Out, and then obviously Haunt You Every Day. So, yeah, that's really what I got for it. It's it didn't have a ton of charting. It did have a score of 52 out of 100 based on critic reviews, which was done by Rolling Stone's discography. But other than that, the song itself didn't have much critical acclaim, and neither did the album. But which is interesting because Beverly Hills, if I pull that one up, I'm sure it was just wild. So hold on, let me see Beverly Hills, the song. Let me just pull this up real quick. Because I actually didn't have this research, but now I'm like, ooh, very curious. Charting Beverly Hills, and fuck you, I don't have it. Anyways.
Oh, cool.
Anyways, with that being said, did not download, would not download.
Would not download, did not would already not have download. Downloaded.
Did not already have downloaded. Beverly Hills I got, but Haunt You Every Day, do not got. So with that, Kelki, back to you.
They covered Africa, but that's definitely not what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
The themes from Dukes of Hazzard. Why is that on here?
They if you've ever seen Weezer live, them and Bowling for Soup have done a lot
of fun. I saw Bowling for Soup in concert.
Did you see when they're just doing a fuck ton of covers and they just like do this giant mashup?
I really don't remember. I'm going to be honest. I just remember doing that and being like, wow, I'm such a cool teenager, guys.
That's very cool. You're very cool.
I am also, coolest.
I did look it up. Beverly Hills peaked at number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
Really?
Yeah. And it went certified gold June 6, 2005.
Definitely thought it would have been higher than that.
Yeah. You'd think so, but not everything doesn't always work that way.
I'm just a teenage dirtbag, baby. Sorry, they covered that song. This is gonna bother me. Okay, we'll keep going. I'll find this at some point.
You're talking
about something else. It's not okay.
Oh, well.
I'm not gonna be able to sleep until I figure this out.
Well, maybe we can continue recording until you figure it out.
Well, okay.
It's what the fans demand. The fans are out there chanting into their microphone right now going, give us the Grays!
There are people who are screaming because they know what the fuck I'm talking about with Weezer cover. And I don't know what I'm talking about, but I will find it and I'll be happy about it.
I'm sure. You know what? You talk. I'm going to do some research. I got you. Give me 3 minutes and I'll find the answer.
This episode was written by Krista Vernoff, who, big news on the Grays front this week, she is leaving as showrunner.
Whoa!
So I posted that article last week on our stories over on Instagram. You can find us there at Grays Academy Pod. So yeah, it was shocking. My jaw was on the ground. I did not see it coming. I am curious to see if the if the show ever stops or if they're going to power through. Obviously we can't get too into it because of spoilies and whatnot, but yeah, it caught me off guard by a lot. So yeah. Anyway, so that's who wrote this one. So she's obviously been around a long time.
I feel like we need to do a whole, like a Patreon episode just where either you could talk about Krista Vernoff and, you know, some of the biggest moments from episodes that you know, because obviously there's a lot that I can't go into, but I feel like that's an episode that needs to just have some time talked about, because by the time I'll be able to actually talk about it, that we'll person could be long dead. Yeah, the apocalypse could come by then.
Honestly.
So, I don't know. We'll have to think about that. We'll have to talk that over.
Yeah. Okay, so
Weezer covered Lost in the Woods from Frozen 2.
Thank you. It's a good cover. Okay.
Yeah.
Directed by Bethany Rooney.
wait. Now that this podcast is totally unhinged. Fall Out Boy has covered What's This from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yes, I heard that cover.
And Bowling for Soup.
We used to play that at Disney Springs.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And then last thing I'm going to say before we move on, Bowling for Soup has covered The Bare Necessities from The Jungle Book.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. So that's all I got. We're done.
This episode aired October 25th, 2007, obviously right before Halloween, thus the Halloween femme.
Loving it, by the way.
And it had 18.17 million views, up a little bit from last week. And the Netflix synopsis is, on Halloween, Alex receives an unexpected visit from a former patient. Who could it be? And Meredith thinks her mother's ashes are haunting her.
What about adding the line, Callie leaves the entire room speechless with big news?
As 3.5 minutes into the episode, like immediately. It was amazing. Okay.
Is there anything else you want to talk about first? Because I would like to start there.
Well, let's do the quick recap. So in this episode, it's Halloween. Bailey's super excited because there's a annual pumpkin carving contest, but they use chainsaws. So there's like a higher number of injuries in the ER. So she's like super excited about it. This is also the episode where everyone finds out about Izzy and George. Meredith brought her mom's ashes to work in a bag. There's a child with no ears they're trying to get pro bono surgery for. Did I leave anything out? There's like the major things that happen, right?
Yeah, there's the older gentleman who was
Norman,
going in for a heart
Norman
trans.
Norman has a problem.
Yep. And And Norman has a stroke.
Yeah.
And then there's the guy who thinks that he has someone else's foot, but he ends up cutting his own foot off. And then I'm trying to think, what's the other big... Dr. Han. Dr. Han comes back.
Oh, yes, Han is back.
And the end of that story, which we'll dig more into, is she's the new head of cardiothoracic surgery. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you listening along are all caught up on the big things, and we'll dig more into that case by case.
So the recap on this episode starts with the whole George Izzy Callie triangle, Ava, Rebecca, Dr. Han, and Ellis is dead. So let's start with, you want to start with the Callie bombshell?
Yes.
Okay. Get into it. Tell me your feelings.
What the fuck?
Your prediction at the end of last episode was that Alex was going to tell everybody when him and George were fighting. That is not how it went down.
That is not the case. Yeah. So first off, what a fucking way to start this episode. I don't think there's been a more...
I laughed out loud. Maybe you're probably not supposed to think it's funny. I don't even care. I had to pause. I was like laughing so hard.
When I texted you saying I love this fucking show, this is what I was talking about. I was talking about that exact scene. I was like, oh, this is literally incredible. So first thing is, so unprofessional. Callie, so unprofessional. This would not stand in a regular hospital, but there's no HR department at Seattle Grace, so that's okay. But like when she's like, hey, Dr. Stevens, you could direct your questions to Bailey. And then they're all like, oh, okay. So we're all talking to Bailey. And then she's like, nope, just Stevens. And then Bailey's the one who's like, okay, yeah, why? It's because Izzy fucked George. They fucked.
When Bailey says why, they cut to Izzy and her face is like, oh my God, please don't, please don't, please don't. And Callie goes, because she's been sleeping with my husband. Okay, then have a great day. And just like leaves. And here's
savage.
The thing that you and I know. You can say it's unprofessional when it technically it is. But you and I have worked with enough people to know shit like this happens all the fucking time.
Oh, yeah.
Grown adults are this petty. And I'm not even faulting her for it, but it's because I don't like Izzy. Like, should people do this in the workplace? No. Should Callie do it? Yes.
It's also funny because Alex knows. So Alex knows. And he's like, this is about to be a good day of work today. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time that Christina, Meredith, and Bailey know. And I couldn't remember. Was Sydney had left, or was Sydney still in the room?
I don't think Sydney was in the room.
I think she might have just left after she was like, blah, blah, blah. You got to shave all your hair off. I got to go cleanse some shit, Meredith. That's what we're going to do now. But when everyone slowly turns and she just books it and she leaves, she says nothing and leaves.
Yep.
I'm like, I'm dying laughing. It's so uncomfortable to watch. I love it. It is just KFC finger looking good cringe that I'm really a big fan of in this. And then Christina gets the one-liner. Do you want to tell us the one-liner that she gets in there at the end? Or did you write
it down? This is more disturbing than your bag full of mommy.
Great. So good. Gosh. Yeah. What a way to start this episode. I really enjoyed that scene. Is there anything else that you specifically wanted to talk about? Or I don't know how long you want to spend on this, because I know there's a lot in this episode.
That scene, I just wanted to know, I think it's the first time that we've seen their quote unquote resident locker space versus the gross intern locker room that we're used to. So I just wanted to point that out. It's a little bit nicer. You know, we're a little more profesh. We have a nicer room to air our petty, dirty laundry in.
with only people who have passed their intern test.
Yes. So,
good scene. Great scene. I was a big fan.
A solid start. Let's just stick with that storyline. So we'll go into for the episode starting out this way, we really don't see a lot of George and Izzy. But let's talk about Christina's reaction. Not initially, but the way she treats Izzy. Tell me,
you want to talk about
how you feel.
Do you want to, you mean like the table scene when they're in the lunchroom?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, her.
So
yeah. how she treats Izzy.
Excuse me, podcast burp. I didn't understand Christina's hatred towards Izzy in this specific episode for this reason. Like, at one point, we're skipping past the lunch table scene, which I think is important to talk on. We'll circle back. But when they're in the hallway and...
Oh, it's a stairwell, remember, because everyone gets stairwell. To have their... everyone gets right. to do their drama in the stairway, but never yes. get discovered.
It's a different stairway, though. It's not the same.
Mm, it was a different stairway. You're right.
Yeah. It wasn't the pick me, choose me, love me stairway, which we also
that
probably
That was a
should.
Scrub room.
Yeah. Well, no...
You're
right.
Thinking of Don't Call Me a Whore.
Yes, that's what I... Yes, it was not the Don't Call Me a Whore stairwell.
Right.
So Izzy calls Christina out on the her and Meredith circle bullshit, which I think is fair. They have the closest friendship out of anyone that we've seen on the show, and it's fair to call them out. However, Christina... I don't understand fully why she's mad, and I really want your perspective on this without giving away too much of the full big picture, but like Izzy was apologizing. Oh, I'm sorry that I did this to Callie. I'm sorry that I did this to Callie. Christina doesn't think about Callie the same way that she does Meredith. And I don't believe that Christina thinks more of Callie than Izzy. I don't know. That was a weird dynamic in that stairway to me.
I think that we're supposed to think that she's mad because she's friends with Callie, because they had an interaction at some point where they weren't friends, and then by the end of the episode they were like, okay, wait, we like each other.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I think that it's supposed to be because of that, but it might also just be that she's like, don't sleep with married people. I don't know.
I understand.
I will say I don't feel like it is presented clearly enough for us to like, I think that there's like, you have to speculate.
Okay. So that's not just me not fully understanding, or I'm missing something. That's like a not fully flushed out, you think, in your opinion as well.
So, yeah.
But now back to the lunch scene. So that we have, the first dynamic where out loud, they're like, yeah, no, we're together. And this, I think, was the first time that George and Izzy were in the same room in the episode when they sat down together. Was that the first time you had them together as well, or did you have something else?
Sorry, when they...
were in the lunchroom.
George and Izzy?
Yeah, was that the first time George and Izzy were together in this episode?
No, they were together waiting for the ambulance with Lexi, when Lexi was like, oh, I can go guys can talk if you want.
Yeah,
and they were like, no, why would we... Everyone knows now. We don't need to whisper about it anymore.
Yeah. It's all good, Lexi. Thank you. that was an interesting scene, because Christina obviously turns away and is like, I can't even look at you. And then Meredith is like, okay, so like I have questions. And they're like, yeah, we're together. And I had to write this quote down. Where is it? Like, together, in love together, sexy love, not sibling love.
Yeah.
And their response was, yes, we're together, but we're waiting out of respect for Callie. As if the cheating was not disrespectful. Yeah. This is the straw that would break the camel's back.
Yeah, that was my thing that I thought like was a valid response that Christina gives when she's just like and gets up and leaves. Because I'm like, yeah, at this point, why now do you decide to pretend to care about her feelings? Because you already slept together during your marriage. So it just seems like maybe you're not going to be that respectful. So
I guess I could understand Christina's point of view if it's like, hey, you were lucky enough to actually have a wedding that was completed, George. So, like, why are you fucking it up? Maybe I could understand that. But, like, that's a bit of a stretch. And that puts a lot of onus on the audience to assume a lot of bridge gapping.
Yeah. I don't like George and Izzy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with your two least favorite characters in the show getting together?
You know, maybe you're tapping into something there.
We'll have to unearth that at some point.
Hard to say. Yeah, the lunch scene, you know, and Meredith, bless her, she's trying to be a good friend, but sometimes being a good friend means being like, that was shitty, guys. That was a shitty thing you've done.
Like, I'm gonna let you be happy, but I need to let you know first that that was shitty and you both suck.
Yeah.
I would have liked to see that scene a little bit too, but I feel like we get that from Bailey.
Yeah, because like Christina isn't, she's not like saying, there's no dialogue. She's just like judging and leaving. Obviously, like her and Izzy have the conversation, but Izzy pushes for it. She doesn't sit Izzy down and she's like, just so you know, I feel this way about this and I think it was shitty. She's straight up just like, I'm mad that you've done this thing. Which like she can be mad, but like you could also tell me why.
Anytime you intimately know someone who has cheated or been in a cheating situation, it's always hard. And I think it's very natural to have that anger and that judgment. But also at the end of the day, like, don't pick Callie's fights for her. I think is one of the biggest things that was going through my head is like, you don't need to be mad at Izzy and George because Callie's going to be doing enough mad, being mad, clearly, as we see 3 minutes into the episode. She's got it covered. Christina, you don't need to do anything else. She's good.
Yeah, I think to me it's more like picking sides, which I feel like people tend to do in these situations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, if you've been close to the situation, you know that sometimes when there's cheating, especially when it's something intertwined, like all of these people, they're friends, they all work together.
Known each other for 9 years.
You pick a side maybe from the get-go. You know, Christina isn't saying like, oh, we're never friends again, but she clearly has someone who she thinks is less wrong in the situation. So I think it's more about just taking sides. I don't necessarily think she's trying to fight Callie's battle, because then even like when she has the argument with Izzy, she really doesn't say that much. Like Izzy's the one that keeps saying like, I'm sorry, I hurt Callie. Christina's just like, you slept with a married person. Like what the fuck?
Yeah. Ultimately, I think that's what it boils down to is Christina's upset about being someone, you know, having sex with a married person. And we see that a lot. Alex does that. I think there's a lot of themes around that. But then Izzy does call her out. She's like, Meredith slept with a married person? Like, what the fuck? Get off your high horse. Get out of your circle, shit.
And also, like, Christina, I don't know. I just feel like she wouldn't be super judgy when it comes to stuff like that, because, like, she's had relationships that people have been judgy about. I mean, in this episode, Han is judgy about her relationship. So
exactly.
I don't know. It's a little confusing. I'm not saying she's wrong. I'm on her side. I'm just confused as to why, because she doesn't hate Izzy and George like I do.
Right. That's her friend, you know, it's
not mine.
Yeah. So, anyways, speaking of sleeping with someone who's married, this Alex and Ava storyline.
Were you surprised that she came back?
Not after I saw her in the recap.
Well, I know. Sometimes recaps are just spoilers. And you know how I don't watch trailers because they're spoilers? That's how I'm starting to feel about recaps.
Yeah.
Sorry, were you surprised when she was in the recap and you went, huh, I guess she's coming back?
Yeah, I was. I was like, oh, Ava's coming back. But also I thought for a second, because they talked about Ellis, I was like, Ellis is dead still, right? Or is she going to come back as the vice president and she needs a surgery from Scandal? Which, by the way, let me just tell you, that show is going fucking crazy right now. Oh my gosh, the president was shot and then Ellis was president and it was crazy. And man, Hollis is a piece of work. Fuck. Anyways.
Hollis Doyle.
You mean
Logan Huntsberger's dad?
Logan, yeah. All of the Gilmore crossovers in this is great. I was surprised when Ava came back in this capacity, because they like they fuck.
They wasted. It seems like the relationship has already occurred, and it has not. They had no physical contact before this episode.
And it was just
right into it. I mean, they have good chemistry. You want to talk about people who actually have chemistry. It's not
they
George
do have
Izzy.
Chemistry.
Yeah, they do.
Well, George and Izzy do have chemistry
because they have no chemistry. That's why they didn't even kiss in this episode.
But they held hands, which is basically butt stuff.
Okay. Anyways, so yeah, Alex and Ava.
So you rewatching this? What? Give me. Let's start with your thoughts with the benefit of hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the storyline as it is right now?
I understand what they're doing, and I don't want to spoil anything else. So that is all I will say.
All right.
With the benefit of no hindsight, what do you feel about the story right now?
This is another annoying storyline.
I know. You were like, you have been mad about it just when they're talking about it in the past couple of episodes. So I've been like, man, he's going to be really mad when she shows back up.
Here's the thing. I like Alex and I like Ava. And I like the Alex and Ava storyline when it was compelling, when she didn't know who she was and he had saved her life. And he was like, I healed this little baby bird's broken wing and it needs to learn how to fly now. When you outwardly tell Addison that we don't have another Denny Duquette situation, and then now you fuck this girl in the on-call room and then ask her to wait for who knows how long. It's just weird and annoying. And then when she's like, oh, I love the baby. And Alex is like, well, tell me about your husband. And she's like, oh, he loves the baby. And like totally deflects. Are you leaving him or not?
No, I think she's saying like, he loves the baby, but not like he doesn't love me. Like we both love the baby and that's why we're together.
I don't know. I felt like she was deflecting. I didn't really feel like that she was really ready to make the commitment to leave him, especially because she leaves. She just leaves and leaves her shirt, which also, was she topless when she left the hospital? I don't fully understand.
She probably
how many
took
layers.
A scrub shirt.
Okay. I just wore it the whole time.
Alice,
my pants! Shout out Alicia with the fanfic.
You guys have to go on Patreon and listen to the Ellis and Richard fan fiction that occurred in an on-call room.
Ugh.
It's pure gold.
It is. It's as gold as the Starbucks cup I'm drinking out of right now. And as gold
and
as the microphone I'm using. So overall, I'm annoyed with the storyline. I just, when she's like, oh, you chickened out and you didn't come for me. I mean, he did.
And again, in the first episode of the season, they mentioned that he like was going to her and he chickened out again.
Yeah. I am annoyed with them, but I'm curious about what's going to happen. Who knows? I have no idea what's going to happen next.
Me neither.
Yeah, you do. Shut your mouth.
Okay, so yes, they bone. And then it's worth noting that at the beginning, Alex is awake. He says he can't sleep. She says something about it and he's like, oh, I haven't been sleeping well. And that's how we get the whole like he falls asleep with her because like he's happy and comfortable and like feels joy in his tiny little heart. And so then she leaves him the shirt so that he can continue to sleep. Like it's sweet. She's married, but it's sweet. It's easier in stories like this where we've only offhand met the husband like the one time and he was like not really like memorable or like anything on either
wasn't,
way. Like bad,
wasn't terrible
or bad. Yeah. Good. Yeah. He just was there, which is how kind of she described him prior to when he showed up, like before when Alex asked and she was like, yeah, he's just boring. So that kind of matched. But it's easier with things like this because we aren't like beholden to this man and like his well-being. We only know Ava and we know her really like with Alex. So it's easier to kind of like root for them, quote unquote, because they don't get you all attached to her husband and and make you like feel bad for him or anything. So I don't know. It's just kind of a weird, it's a weird and different dynamic than the George Callie thing, because we so intimately know all of those characters.
Yeah. I am not an Ava and Alex stan. Whatever happens, like if she leaves her husband and they're happy, fine. But I think that's the hard part for me. And I'm with Christina in the sense of the infidelity. That's the hard part. And that's the part that I don't enjoy, you know, George and Izzy be together, love each other. That's fine. Just like George, you should have divorced Callie first, or like never married her and never got her hopes up. And
they're waiting now to be respectful.
Oh yeah, totally. I forgot how I am so apologetic, but I don't know. It's just, it's tough. What I would hope to see an official prediction is Ava leaves her husband and comes back.
And it's just there.
No, they are.
She doesn't live in Seattle.
Maybe they'll have
sex
like one
traveling.
One
more time.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I didn't think about that. Yeah, they will have sex at least one more time. But after that, the future is unclear. My magic eight ball says try again later.
Okay, so yeah, there's not much to that storyline. She just keeps saying like, oh, we need to talk, and I'm like, what do you want? It bothers me when people say that, because like they're in a scenario where they can talk, but like she wants him to say things. She wants him to be like, leave your husband or do whatever. Like she wants to be told what to do and told it's okay. She doesn't want to. All these people are just looking for other people to take the burden of responsibility away from them.
Yeah.
Like George wants Callie to end the marriage, even though he did the bad thing. Derek's the same way. Like it's just that's a very common theme, I feel like, in this show.
And the Derek and Meredith
thing.
The
Pacific Northwest in general.
I did not ever think about that. There's something in the water in Elliott Bay.
Apparently.
Gosh, which ocean is that on that side of the country? Is it the Atlantic or the Pacific?
Yes.
Okay. If you're a geography major,
it's Pacific.
Let us know. Oh yeah, Pacific Northwest. Fuck. Stupid. Stupid fucking. And Atlantic City, New Jersey. You know? Am I right? Wow. That's, if you're studying for a geography test, go ahead and use that. Seattle, where the cheaters live, is the Pacific Northwest. And then Atlantic City, where you gamble, is on the Atlantic side of the ocean.
You're doing amazing right now. You should be a teacher.
Okay. Let's talk about Derek and Meredith, because I have thoughts on this.
Okay.
I'm tired of their storyline. Jessica asked me what she watched some of the show with me, and Lexi was there. She's like, what do you think of Lexi? And I was like, I don't hate her. She is the reason that Derek and Meredith are compelling. Like, I am more interested in Meredith because of Lexi. I'm more interested in how Derek and Meredith end up because of Lexi. And she's not inserting herself into this relationship as much as Derek has invited her into this conversation. But Lexi makes them more interesting. With that being said, the scene that we get a very, very little bit of glimpse of Derek and Meredith in this episode. They bump into each other and he knocks Ellis out of her hands and
all over the floor. You got some mom on the floor there. Missed some of your mom. Let me Dyson up your mom real quick.
Sheesh. Dump her out. Hopefully the Dyson was empty before I started sucking up mom bits. But then you get the end where Derek's like, I gotta start dating. I'm done with them. She said, I'm trying to evolve to Derek, to his face. And by the end of the episode, he's like, I gotta start dating. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, it's really confusing.
She's done everything you've asked.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. You see what I'm saying, everybody? This man is garbage. Like, he's not pressuring her, but at the same time, like, he has made his wants clear, which I do think is good. It's good to communicate your needs, expectations, and wants in a relationship. But she is now trying to do her emotional homework to meet those needs. And he's like, well, while you're doing that, I will find someone else to have sex with. And that's fucked up. Guys,
so fucked
that's
up.
Fucked up.
And it would be different if they never interacted and he had no idea that she was doing this whole episode. I get it. Makes sense. Especially because now all these people are throwing themselves at you because of this prank that Mark played on you, which is masterclass. Incredible. They have great chemistry, the two of them in this episode. But it doesn't make sense. She physically told you, I'm trying
looked
to evolve.
Looked him right in the face.
Yes. She's talking to you, Derek.
Stupid, stupid face.
She pulled her mom out of her closet and brought her to work because of you.
This is your fault. Again, people just aren't taking responsibility.
Also, it's Meredith, I'm going to put this one on you a little bit. It's okay to leave your mom up in the urn in your closet.
Or
people
if you're
going
to bring her to
ashes.
Work, you can bring the urn. I don't know why we need her in a Ziploc.
Yeah, right.
That seems more disrespectful than putting her in the car, is the fact that she's in plastic.
Yeah, she said, cubby your car. Well, she's in a plastic Ziploc sandwich bag. So let's back this up 5 steps.
Yeah.
Has anyone in your family been cremated?
Yeah, I think most people have.
Does your family have their ashes in the house?
No.
Is that like a thing? No?
No.
Okay. I know
I think
people,
most people I know that are cremated were those then were buried. Or they have like now it in the cemeteries, they have like walls with like drawers and the drawers are like the ashes are in the drawers.
That's
you
weird.
Can't like pull just, the drawers out. I'm saying drawer and I'm doing a drawer motion. The drawers are like sealed. You can't pull the drawer out.
So it's not like looking into like an archaeological dig at school in fourth grade.
Yeah, it's not like a museum where you can be like, oh, what does these ashes look like?
It all looks the same, everyone.
Yeah.
All of you racists out there, listen up. All
also,
the ashes look the same.
When you cremate someone or get together, you have to sign that like you're getting other people's ashes as well.
Yeah, unless I mean you could pay you could pay an upcharge, the upgrade package,
the
for
upgrade
a solo,
where they vacuum it out
the
to
solo
make sure
cremation.
You're only getting your loved one.
Yeah, you're getting 3/4 of dad and 1 leg from Joe down the street.
The way that I just like, I'm just like, I don't care. Like, I'll be dead. I don't give a shit. Like, yeah. I have no desire to be buried because it's expensive and it takes up space.
Terrible
but like
for
beyond
the world.
That, like I don't really give a shit. You can donate me to science. That's probably helpful, you know.
I don't know if I want that. Only because never mind. I'm not going to make that penis joke. I Jessica and I have talked. There's a new thing right now where you could be a tree. You can be buried and your urn is turned into a tree. Your ashes grow a tree. That's cool. I like that idea. But like I would have to be planted in a forever home. It's not like if you're going to move, don't. No, you need to own this house forever.
You need to be
planted
at like the edge of a mountain where you're like overlooking a city or something.
No, I want to be with my family. I want to watch them all grow up. I want
you will be watching
them
from heaven.
Well, that's
or
that's
from good, afterlife land.
That's a good counterpoint. That is a great. I never thought of it that way.
Not you're not beholden to where the tree is. You are not a unless you're a ghost in the tree. Now it's the ghost tree of Carmen. Like it's not. You can watch anything.
That's fair. You know, this is a whole new perspective of the afterlife. I never, you know, I thought, yeah, I'll be in heaven, but the tree. It's very important that location.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a lot to talk about still. The moral of the story is don't put your ashes in a Ziploc bag and then
the moral
ask,
of the story is Derek sucks.
Yeah, that's the real moral of the story.
Yet again.
Okay, let's
surprised.
Oh gosh, it's hilarious. So let's lightning round this. Let's talk about we've got the old guy who comes in who needs a new heart, which by
that's
the way,
that's
was
so sad.
He was in, oh, it's terribly sad. And what was it? Kids were doing a prank. They were throwing bricks off a bridge.
Guys, terrible. Actions have consequences. Do not fuck around just because it's Halloween.
Yeah, terrible. And he, the old guy, he was in an episode of Scrubs.
I saw that when I was doing the thing.
Yep. And he, anyways, he's a good guy in that show. He doesn't die. He doesn't die in this one either. But terribly so sad with his daughter. Imagine that you're out there and you're going to the hospital and your kid goes, hey, I'm going to go pick up something from the house. They come back and they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Because a kid threw a brick off a bridge right through the window of a car. I'm never driving underneath a bridge ever again. I'm never driving on a bridge. Never. Screw bridges.
I actually really don't like bridges. They make me very nervous.
Because at any point it could be the moment where the bridge breaks.
Yeah. Or you could just what if someone swerves and then you swerve to miss them and then you just dive off of the bridge. And especially when it's if it's over water, I'm like, okay, decent chance of survival. I'm a good swimmer. It's not the ocean. I can get wherever. I mean, it's cold, but that would suck. But when it's the overpass and you're just over land, you're going to die.
See, not the opposite, but I am equally as afraid of the water. And especially when I think of so I was driving on the highway the other day and it was snowing. It was icy. And there's a lake on the side of the road. I had Marlo in the backseat. What if I hit a slick piece of ice and I can't get my daughter out and I have to decide between both of us dying or just me dying? That's terrifying to me.
Wait, water, why do you have to decide that?
Because what if we're sinking too quickly in the car and I can't get Marlo's seatbelt undone, her car seat undone?
Okay, so here's the situation, because you just get her undone and then you open the window to leave. You don't let the car flood and then debate how to save yourself.
The problem is that once you're underwater, the pressure, it's too great. You won't even be able to open up the car door.
That's why you have to crack a window. A little bit crack the window.
Once you hit the water. Okay.
You crack a window or two,
okay,
opposite sides. Also, I have this thing that's it's a crank flashlight. You crank it and then the lights up. Okay. And it has the little peg on it that breaks glass.
Can you send me a link to that? Because I have neither of these. I need this.
Yeah, and it has a teensy little blade that can cut the seatbelt if the seatbelt is stuck.
Oh, send this to me.
It's
Amazon.
$9, guys.
Give it to me.
This is this is advice, and not a joke. That's something you should just have in your car.
Yes.
Because also the side of the flashlight is reflective. So if you were stuck, you could put it on the road and their lights would reflect off of it and they could see that there was something there.
This is life changing. Because you know what really fucked me up is the opening scene to Olympus Has Fallen, where
I'm not seeing that.
Oh my gosh. Aaron Eckhart is the president and Gerard Butler is his right hand man. No? You haven't seen this movie? No? Mm-mm. Okay, anyways. Okay. Anyways, it's very sad. Don't throw bricks off windows as well. Bridges as well. Don't do that.
Okay, this is an updated version. So they have this, it's on Amazon, guys, for $19. It is Care Light, CareLite, Care Light store. It's just an emergency car flashlight, and it has a hammer that breaks glass, the blade that will cut your seatbelt, a flashlight, and it has a magnet. I don't know what you would need that for, but yeah, it's just this is just truly a good thing to have. I just am actually recommending this without, I know we say a lot of dumb shit, but I feel like this is good advice.
I need it. Text it to me.
I am literally texting it to you right now. Anyways,
Grey's Anatomy.
Sorry.
Okay.
Guys, wrong place.
So we have that guy, the guy, he ends up taking the heart ultimately.
Yeah. It allows George to have a nice moment. I like his speech where he's like, I don't have a kid, but I did have a dad and he died and I would have wanted him to have my heart if he could have stayed alive. So I know that your daughter would want you to have her heart. Especially after we see the daughter earlier, fighting for him. We know that she cared a lot about him. It's not she's like, oh man, I hate this man. She loved her dad for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a bummer. It's a good scene for George. Actually, I liked this moment for George. With any kid, obviously, if you could sit there and you could say, like, if I could have saved my dad, I would have. I couldn't have, but I would have. Good scene for George. I do like that there was that moment where Han was like, okay, dude, like, you don't need me. You're calling me out. Okay. And the guy stood up to Dr. Han, which I think was really cool, because I feel like she's the kind of personality and the kind of doctor that isn't used to having people stand up to her. So really, really good for him. I like that.
Here's what I'll say. Obviously, we have seen Han a handful of times now. Spoiler alert, this is her first episode as like a cast member. Like, she's not a guest star anymore. She's a cast member. And we don't know a lot about her, but in the last episode, I mean, in the recap, they say, like, they show her telling Christina, "You remind me of me," which I feel like is accurate. They have a lot of similarities, and it makes sense. Like, they're talented. They're in the same field. They're very focused, tunnel vision kind of people. So then I find it weird and obnoxious when she like turns and shit talks Christina. I'm like, so you don't actually think that she's like you?
That was a weird about face
with your mentors.
Yeah. She did say there was a couple of adjectives. It was like intense, ambitious, and cold, something like that.
Yeah.
So also wasn't it public knowledge at the time where they were working together that Burke and her were together?
I think so.
So the only thing that could have changed is that she heard about the Colin Marlowe thing. Maybe. I don't know. That was, it was just a weird pivot. And I'm with you on that one. It was weird.
Also, I feel like sleeping with someone to get something is not the same as having long-term committed relationships with people. Like, I don't think you have long-term committed relationships with people to get what you want. You have them, and then your lives are just intertwined where it works out that, like, you have the same interests. And Christina says, like, I'm attracted to talent. So, like, I liked these men because they're very talented and they're, like, the best in their field, and I want to have the best. And that makes sense to her personality. So it's just frustrating. Like, I don't know. I don't much care for that moment. And then Izzy is like, I would have defended you if she asked me, but she didn't ask me, so I'm just gonna stand there and let her be a bitch. Like, oh. Okay. Yeah,
I'm with you on that. I'm excited for Han to be a part of the crew. Hopefully she lasts longer than Colin Marlowe did in this transition. I don't have any predictions for her though. I'm gonna leave it at that. I'm just excited. I liked Han's character. I thought that she was like this. You have a lot of very strong female characters in this show, and I'm excited to see the first throwdown between her and Bailey, or her and Callie, and see what happens there, because we lost Addison. Ellis is dead. Those are two. There's a recurring character and a main character that we lost. So I'm excited to see what she brings to the show with this. And it's very exciting. So I'm happy for it.
Yeah.
I think Christina sticks her foot in her mouth right before she finds out.
Yeah, that's an incredible moment. Let's talk also, though, about the whole at the beginning. Christina is trying to wants to be rid of Burke's apartment. She wants to get rid of the lease or sell it. I don't really know if she owns it or what the deal is, but she wants to get rid of Burke's apartment. So she hangs up the flyer and Weber is like, I'll take it. Adele is divorcing me, which that is like such an offhand comment. What did you think of that?
It was not shocking, because we saw what happened with the last episode where she was so mad at Weber for like thinking that it was his fault that Camille was going to eventually die.
Yeah.
But we've, as the audience, been led to believe that there was reconciliation, like there was forgiveness. There was, Derek and him had this whole thing about what would you do differently? You're a new man. You're better this time around. and then to see it still end up the same way is a little bit jarring, I think, from an audience standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, especially after you really think it's going to be okay. And then out of left field, it's not okay again. It's kind of a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a lot. But it then she's like, hey, it's yours. And then obviously at the end of the episode, she's like, no, fuck you. Callie's moving in, which I. So she wasn't giving up the apartment. She was looking for a new roommate.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Because then
maybe
Callie comes in.
She can't afford it. So it was going to be like, I'll move. And then it just worked out where Callie was probably like, I would like to not live in a hotel anymore. And also my life is falling apart. And Christina was like, neat, me too. Come live with me.
Yeah. And that's fine. I'm really excited to see their dynamic, especially when she's like, can I like tidy up a bit? And Christina's like, no, yeah. Who the fuck do you think you are? You're going to live in my filth, bitch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it makes sense because like she's kind of trying to reclaim herself after the whole Burke thing, because she gave up a lot of herself. We talked about being the best version of yourself versus being a completely different person in another episode. And I think that's kind of where we're at with the Burke thing. And so she's kind of trying to reclaim who she is. And as we saw in like the first or second season, she's messy. And that apartment, every time we saw it, was pristine. So now she, Preston, now she's like, I'm going to like live here and I'm going to be messy. So yeah. There was something else I wanted to mention. Oh, before we get into Crazy Footman, let's take a small break to hear a word from our sponsors, maybe. Oh, that was so nice, sponsors. Thank you so much for giving us ads.
Thank
or
you
not.
For your
Who
money.
Knows? It's a freaking mystery. So
we did have we had some messages.
It worked out last time. We were
going to work out this time too. This is incredible.
And we will continue our break for everyone's favorite segment, Living in Shondaland.
Living in Shondaland. Pow 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 pow.
Ooh, nice riff. One.
That was, I have the gold monitor.
I feel like you should know who it is.
So I have to. It's old guy.
Oh, no, it's not. It's the kid with no ears. I thought you would have seen him on Scandal by now. He's the president's son.
Oh.
In like six or seven episodes of Scandal.
Yeah, I haven't seen too much of the president's kids.
Okay. I couldn't remember when he showed up. I thought it was already. I also didn't know exactly where you were.
Well, Melly just had the kid.
Teddy.
Timmy Turner. Teddy Roosevelt.
Timmy's teeth.
Yes. Tiny teeth and me. Yeah. Anyways, so I don't remember too much of the kids, so I haven't seen that kid. No, I didn't get that one, so I'm wrong. But okay. Tell me about this kid. Tell me all about him.
So his name is Dylan Minetti.
Okay.
He is, in this episode, he plays Ryan, the boy with no ears. He has ears in real life. He was in six episodes of Scandal. He plays the president's son. The president's older son, not the baby.
yeah, comes out looking like a kid.
This is also, he was in the original Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief that was like a garbage film. And
oh yeah,
he is also the lead kid in 13 Reasons Why.
I hate that show.
It's well done. Like the acting is good. The show is wildly problematic.
Yeah, there's Jessica watched it and
I watched all of it, and it is really, 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 really not great at a lot of things.
Yeah,
but the acting is good. That's pretty much all you can say.
Yeah, any show that's going to tackle that much rape and death and suicide and stuff,
self-harm, assault, self-harm, like it's a lot.
Very intense, and I get that that's a show that people enjoy. It's not a show I enjoy, so I'll
it's
leave
like
it
it's not
that.
It's not light watching.
No,
it's really, really intense, heavy shit constantly, nonstop.
It's not a non-stop show you just put on in the background to feel good about life. It's not Friends. It's not Psych. It's not a safety show. That's a I want to feel miserable, so I need to watch this show kind of show.
Also, I am so sorry. He was not the kid in Percy Jackson.
Are you sure? It looked like him.
Yes. There's another person named Logan Lerman who looks like they could definitely be related, but they are different people, and that is on me. So sorry. Real-time correction. I really thought that was him. It wasn't.
Well, hopefully if you were yelling at your phone, or if you're in your car and you're slamming on the brakes, yelling at Kelsey.
Now you can forgive me.
Now you can forgive her. But we appreciate your passion for the truth. Okay.
So let's get into our patients. So we'll start with ear boy, Ryan. He shows up looking for Sloane, and did you think actually it was Sloane's? Like, did you think?
Oh, right away.
Yeah.
And then when Derek got him with the daddy thing, I was like, oh, fuck. And I was like, oh, okay, never mind. That's funny.
That's a good joke. I like what they're really lightly laying the groundwork for the Derek and Mark friendship to be back in action.
What I will say before you keep going, I'm sorry to cut you off.
There you go.
It didn't occur to me until the surgery was done that they never fact checked this kid's story. Never once were they like, well, let's go talk to your mom. Like,
I was surprised that we never see the mom at any point.
She never thanks Mark. She never is like, oh, this is my son, Brian or Ryan. What is it? Brian? Ryan?
Ryan. Ryan.
Ryan.
Shout out.
Shout out. Love you, Ryan.
Yeah, she never shows up, which is surprising because at the very least you'd think she'd show up and probably have sex with Mark.
Maybe. If it gets the job just done.
Tracks.
Pro or bono. Like pro boner.
Okay. So they have to do this surgery pro bono. Obviously, the mom works in the cafeteria, so we are having to assume that they're not, like, swimming in extra cash. So he has the internal structure to hear. He just doesn't have the outward hardware to make it happen, I guess. And Mark is straight up like, I'll do it, but like, I can't guarantee that we'll have all the other people we need for me to be able to do it. And then Meredith is like, well, I can get them. If I get everyone together, will you do it? And he's like, yeah, for sure. Which is nice. You're like, oh, okay, Mark, you don't suck. You're a good person.
It's interesting to see him come to this reckoning though, where it's like, I have, what does he say? No social capital.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, Mark, just don't bang everyone. Now, don't get me wrong. I want everyone to have consensual sex as often as they want. Okay. But like, what's the saying? Don't shit where you eat.
Don't shit where you eat. Don't dip your pen in the company ink.
Like, you're an attractive enough guy. You don't need to bang every nurse. You don't. I'm happy for you. I'm happy for them. You strike
apparently
me as a generous lover.
Because they're mad about it.
Well, okay, that's a them problem. Who cares? I don't know. Anyways, continue.
I do think it's funny that they're like, we compared techniques. And then they say identical, and he's like, really? Like, he's disappointed in himself for not mixing it up more.
Yeah, remember that whole can't teach an old dog new tricks thing, Mark? Yeah, boring.
The nurses, Meredith is able to get everyone. She guilts Richard into it, but she's like, my mom loved pro bono surgery, which does not seem like an Ellis thing. Would Ellis, like, that doesn't track. Like, I'm not, I believe you. I don't think she's lying. It just doesn't track that Ellis would be into that.
Also, we have to point out that Weber, all he needed to do was hear Ellis's name, and he's like, oh, I'm crumbling. Okay, whatever you need.
Honestly, she should have been like, if you don't do this surgery, if you don't greenlight this surgery, I will throw a bag of my dead mother at you.
Not all of it. Just like a small portion of it.
It's like a handful.
Because I need this giant gallon Ziploc bag for other things. So I'll use a snack bag portion. I'll use a quarter cup on you. chief.
Yeah, it's just like, it's so weird. But I agree. All she does is say the name and he's like, okay, every valid reason that I just said is out the window because I slept with your mom a million years ago.
And then held her while she died. You wouldn't even have those ashes if it wasn't for me, Meredith. I killed her. Just like the president killed Supreme Court Justice Verna.
You are doing the most. I hope everyone's watched Scandal.
Spoiler! Come on. The second he leaves the room, you know she did it. He did it, I mean.
Yeah. So, okay. What else? Yeah, so they do the surgery. It's successful. I don't know that there's really that much else to be said about that storyline. It's good. He helps Meredith at the end. He's like, flushing the fish down the toilet is better than the cubby. So yeah, ultimately I think that the wrap up on that Ellis in the baggie storyline is really nice, where she washes her down the scrub sink with Richard. I think that's perfect. Like, could not be more fitting for Ellis, I think, more than anything else you could really suggest.
Yeah. It's a nice scene to the end of their particular storyline in this episode, where Weber's like, Meredith, what the fuck? This is a sanitary, this is a sanitized environment. Like, you're gonna kill someone. And then she's like, it's my mom. And then again,
he's like, oh, okay, let me help you then.
Yeah. Should we say a prayer? Well, she believed in nothing except pro bono surgeries.
Should we say a prayer? No, but we should do another pro bono surgery.
6 years from now when I bring up her name again.
I'll scatter her ashes in the patient of the pro bono surgery.
Right inside. There's a little bit in the lungs, a little bit on the heart, and just a pinch just by the pancreas.
When Burke left that towel inside of that old lady from Scrubs.
Incredible. Gosh, I remember that.
It's all coming back together. It's all coming back. Okay.
It's all connected.
Indeed. And I still haven't watched that, but I will. So, okay, Crazy Foot Man. Let's get into Crazy Foot Man.
This guy is what a short but intense storyline.
And unresolved.
There's no arc. There's zero arc. Everyone calls him crazy. That's it.
Yeah. No arc. No resolution for this poor man. I believe that the site console is probably right. I feel like it has to be body dysmorphic disorder, which most of the time is spoken about in relation to like eating disorders, but clearly it has other
manifestations,
yes, as well.
Is that the exact word you were looking for?
Yeah, it was.
Incredible.
And so I believe that diagnosis is probably correct, but the fact that's doctor is like, just give him medicine. I take anti-anxiety medication, and when I was first being put on medication, first of all, like, very rarely do you get lucky enough that the first type of medication and dosage is what works. Like, a lot of times it's trial and error and you have to try multiple things to figure out what works best for you, because brains are all very different and wild, and if they don't make serotonin right, or they don't like process information correctly, like, there's no tried and true formula of how to fix that. And also, if you have to take any kind of mental illness medication, they will tell you that it typically takes minimum 2 weeks for your body to adjust and you start seeing any like positive results. So for 2 weeks, this man is, best case scenario, this man takes this medication and accepts that he is suffering from a mental illness and has this same issue that has for another 2 weeks with no resolution, like no relief for him. So I believe that the diagnosis is correct. What I take issue with is how this doctor wants to deal with it, or truly not deal with it. And it's disappointing to see Bailey kind of like brush him off that way, because that's not the Bailey doctor. And cause she calls out the psych doctor, and then she gets so excited about the chainsaw bullshit that she's like, okay.
Yeah. I had that exact thought and that exact beef with Bailey in this episode. Like, this guy is asking you to amputate a perfectly good foot Mm-hmm. You see that. And the second I was like, oh, this guy's going to take matters into his own hands. I didn't think he was going to chainsaw the shit off. But I was like, he's going to leave and then come back with a half severed foot. Or he's going to be like, he passed out somewhere trying to cut it off or something. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. When it's in their head, you can't stop them. And Bailey knows that.
And she says to him, no one is going to do this for you. Like, I don't think he would have done it. I think he would have continued to pursue medical attention until she says, no surgeon is going to cut off your foot. Now leave. So that's a little bit on her, honestly.
Yeah. I agree.
And then, yeah, he just steals that chainsaw in the ER, which why did they let that man come into the ER with the chainsaw? Like, someone should have confiscated the chainsaw.
His finger was in there.
Again, we will discuss when we had to go into hospitals and we had to go on through full metal detectors. But this gentleman just gets to waltz into the ER with a full chainsaw.
Different times, different times. Back in my day, we were able to carry full-on AK-47s into the hospital.
Well, it's just like, it was still 2007.
I'm kidding. Well, not when you had a kid.
No, in this story.
Right.
Yeah, no, and I did not have a kid in 2007. Correct.
The only metal detector. The only metal detector I walked into in a hospital recently was your child.
Oh.
I don't see them, but like, I just was visiting a friend who got into a car crash a couple weeks ago, and I don't have to walk into a metal detector.
No, you just had to check in, right?
I said to check in. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I feel bad that this guy's resolution is the end of his arc is he makes Norman pass out and gives Norman a stroke.
He doesn't give Norman a stroke.
No, he doesn't. But he did. There was a good scene. Unfortunately, it ended with Norman having a stroke, which he's fine. Mr. Gilmore is okay. Yes. He's going to live. There's a really good scene between Callie and Christina.
Yes. And that scene leads to me being very excited for them to be living together.
So tell me more about you're the biggest Christina stan on the show. You're Queen Christina all the way.
And you know I also love Callie.
Yeah, well, we both like Callie. You like Christina more than me.
Yes. I like Christina more than I like you. Correct.
It's fair. It's fair.
They're doing the surgery to finish cutting off this man's foot. They just kind of say like, oh, he wanted to take his life into his own hands. Like, I get that. And then they commiserate about how their lives are not what they thought they would be. Callie's like, I'm getting divorced. I'm going to be a divorcee. And Christina's like, I got left at the fucking altar when I was in a wedding dress with no eyebrows. Like, and Burke sent his mother to say his goodbyes to me. Like, it is a very good scene, and they just laugh about it because ultimately that's all you can do sometimes, you know, that's all you can do.
When it's that insane, you just have to. When your life is falling apart, sometimes it's all you can really do. Laughter is the best medicine, so they say. But yeah, I do feel bad. Ultimately, I feel bad for Callie and Christina. They both have gone through very traumatic experiences. The end of this laughing session ends with Norman passing out, hitting the floor because of a stroke, which yes. I did not see coming. I knew something was going to happen, but I didn't think.
Yeah, because the whole episode he's saying like, oh, I don't feel good. Oh, I don't feel good. Oh, I don't feel good. So you thought they were setting him up to vomit.
Yeah, like something, I don't know, not that intense. Because as far as I'm aware, I don't know a lot about strokes, but I imagine that you don't feel them coming on.
Well, so I think there's different kinds, because when Derek is in there with the catheter, he's in his chest.
Okay.
He's not in his brain.
Right.
Which is where I feel like strokes typically are. But I'm not a doctor, and I did no research, so I really can't say.
If you're a doctor or have done research on this, or if you're a stroke survivor, let us know.
There are, like, a lot of people have strokes and then recover really well, like completely. It's impressive. If you catch it early enough, And they talk about this, like, I feel like in a bajillion more Grey's episodes, and I'm sure in probably other episodes of medical stuff you've seen. It's just like they can catch it and be fine, but there has to be some difference because they can also not catch it and then like never walk or like talk again.
Strokes and aneurysms are too, like, I'm terrified of both of those because they can happen anytime. Heart attack. I mean, anything could happen at any time. The house that I'm in right now could crash on me, and I'm in the basement, so I'm dead. And it's cold outside. I'm freezing to death before someone gets me. Anything could happen. But it's poor true. Norman, and he lives. Anyways, he wakes up. He's like, "Well, what happened? What did I miss?
He's all." And then I like the resolution on that story as well.
Where
he tells Alex, he's like, "I'm gonna go into psych because you people need more shrinks and your messy, messy little lives."
I didn't realize that surgery was just kids running around with scalpels making sex jokes all day.
Yeah.
Which, and come on, use your brain, Norman. That's exactly what alert. It is.
This is a series wrap on Norman.
Oh, Norman. Rest no more in peace. Norman.
Would be great if we saw Norman giving them all therapy because they all fucking need it. But alas.
Oh, no yeah. Norman. That would have been great. Imagine an episode where it's set up like the Mama Burke episode where everyone kind of gets their piece with Mama Burke. But it's everyone gets their psych evaluation with Dr. Norman.
Yeah.
I'd watch that TV show.
I'd be into it. Be into it. Who have we not talked on?
We haven't talked about the little bit of Sydney we get in this episode.
Oh yes, Sydney aggressively flirting with Derek.
Weird. Oh, we met in an Eminem concert. Eminem
concert. Remember when we all singing about Denny Duquette's death?
Yeah, at that Eminem concert. Oh man, at the M&M conference, we met once. We sat next to each other. She says that like a thirsty dog.
I will say it doesn't really make sense that they wouldn't already know each other.
Yeah, because she's not an intern. She's a resident.
Yeah, it's weird that they don't already know each other.
Plot hole. And then we get a little bit of Lexi. We get Lexi giving actually a pretty decent help to the storyline that leads Meredith to her resolution.
That's such a good scene between the two of them.
Yeah, where Lexi basically is like, "Hey,
this is how I coped with my mom's death."
Right.
We're all insane.
Yeah, because you know that's what doctors have to be a little bit insane to make their lives work. And anyone really has, we're all insane. And she's like, I dug up this cat. My mom loved this cat. So what I did was I unburied this decaying cat. I snuck into a cemetery. I dug a hole next to my mom's grave without anyone seeing it. And I reburied this cat. That's how I got over her death. So it's okay that you want to bury your mom in your car or take her around in a Ziploc bag. Just know that everyone's coping journey is not linear.
Yes.
It's nice. It's a nice scene.
It is a nice moment. And Meredith is, and they also have the nice moment before where Meredith is like, "Oh, I just helped build ears." And Lexi says, "Oh, I just watched a heart transplant." So they just like, they're being okay, which I really like the scene. I'm glad it's there. But after last episode, it feels like something is missing because at last episode, she's mad that Derek is talking to Lexi about her. And there's never, like, we don't see Meredith, like, come to terms or get the information on that. So it seems like Meredith would still be mad about it. I'm glad she's not. This is preferable to watch and enjoy. But it's missing. It's missing pieces to me.
I agree. The Lexi and Meredith storyline's on a little bit of a roller coaster. You go from her hating Lexi to, "Hey, let's talk about the file for your mom's death. Like, this is exactly what happened for the chart." And then it's, "Oh, well, I hate that you're talking to this guy who thinks he wants to be with me, but doesn't actually want to be with me because he's kind of a crazy person," to, "Let's bond over our dead moms." It's definitely a crazy storyline. But the thing is again, I like Lexi as a character. She makes Meredith more multidimensional, and I'm excited to see their relationship continue to grow.
Yeah.
trying to think what else we have before we get to ranking this episode. We have anything else you want to talk about with the Bailey and George scene at the end?
That is another really good scene. I'll talk about it when I get into the ranking, but this is a really good scene. I agree really a lot with what Bailey is saying. Things aren't black and white. Like, she is clearly also struggling to balance her work and home life. And she is struggling to make her husband understand that there is more to it than what he's like giving her credit for. And that's just a really real moment. And I also really like it because we don't see a lot of Bailey being vulnerable and sharing parts of herself, like personal. So it's just a really nice moment that she's sharing with George, and it's just makes her even more likable. I just love her.
Agreed. Some of the things that she says to George is it takes two, and you did it. Basically, she says you did a bad thing, but you're not a bad guy.
Yes. And I think that's true of most people. It just because you do one bad thing, it doesn't define who you are. Obviously, it depends on what the bad thing is. Like, if you're a murderer, then I do think you're a bad person. But like, people are allowed to make mistakes. We're all human beings. And I do think this mistake is bad. I don't really feel like there's been a lot of consequence or a lot of like accountability, or like, I don't really feel like George is really holding himself, like recognizing what he's done. But I do think that it is what Bailey's saying is true. I agree with her basically. And I love the moment also when George apologizes to her and she says, "I'm not your mom." And he's like, "Oh my God, I have to apologize to my mom."
That was very funny. There's a little bit of perfect comedic timing into an otherwise very, very intense emotional scene. I'm going to disagree with you. I think that George has, while he hasn't felt a true level of sorriness that I think he should, like, he doesn't feel regret and remorse at the level that he should, I think he understands the magnitude of what he's done. Because we have that scene with him and Izzy where she's like, "Did you do it yet? Like, what's going to happen?"
Yeah, and he's like, right. That is a good scene.
Where it basically,
he's like, "I have to hurt her."
Yeah. This woman, this incredible woman who has done nothing wrong other than marry me.
Yeah.
And I have to break her heart for us. Yeah. Like, I think that he understands, but I'm glad that him and Izzy finally got that scene. I thought it was going to turn out a little bit more like the Alex and Bailey scene where she yells and hits him, but it didn't make sense for their character and their dynamic, because I remembered that, like, literally George saved her husband's life.
No, hers and her baby's.
Right, hers. He helped deliver the baby. That's right. But
yeah, I think their specific relationship does go beyond just the hospital.
Yes,
because of that. And also, like, she worked a lot on his dad, and she says, like, "I was there when your dad died. Like, I remember," like, they're acknowledging that their relationship is more than just teacher and student. And I really like their dynamic. As much as I don't really like George, I really like his dynamic with Bailey.
Yeah, I agree. George and Bailey actually remind me a little bit of JD and Dr. Cox in Scrubs, because there's obviously Dr. Cox is much more of a jerk, and that's his whole character, is he's a dick, but he's got this soft spot for JD, and Bailey obviously wants to teach all these people, because whether or not she's always empathetic, that's obviously a different story, but she always wants to teach. She always wants to make sure they're better doctors. But for some reason, George and their lives or her lives are intertwined a little bit more. And I do like that there's a dynamic there. I agree with you. So I think that's, unless there's anything else you want to talk about, let's rank these episodes.
You go first.
All right. I'm giving this episode a resident 3.9.
Wow.
I like this episode. I think that it's like, you know how they say you make a first impression in the first 10 seconds. I think you really, excuse me, podcast burp, you know, you're going to love an episode in the first couple of minutes. And I think that the scene where Callie just drops the bomb on everyone 3 minutes in or 3.5 minutes in, set the tone for the episode really high. And there was nothing dramatic. There was no bombs in a butt. There was no anything like that.
Well, there's foot cutting.
There's definitely that.
Also pretty early in the episode.
There's just a lot of good setting the stage, built good relationship. You're deepening characters, deepening the Lexi Meredith character storyline. You're deepening the Christina Callie storyline. You're deepening George and Izzy for the first time admitted that they're like a thing. So like there's a standard. Once you say yes, you're together, there's a standard that they need to figure out moving forward of what that looks like. So then obviously the Mark and Derek, they're rebuilding their friendship there. So there's a lot that's happening, and I'm really a fan of the things, but I wouldn't say it was enough to make it a 4. So that's what I got. What about you?
It's like a resident. I think it might just be a resident for me.
Interesting. This might be the farthest away we've been for a while.
I think so. And like everything you're saying is true. And what's frustrating to me about this episode is like all of those little moments are good, but like the episode as a whole, I find a little lacking. Like the whole, why is Christina so upset? It's not explained. Why are Meredith and Lexi just fine now? Why is Derek the worst still? I just like the little scenes are really good with people, but I think the overarching stuff, I'm just like, it leaves a lot of questions and that bothers me. I don't love that. But I like the bits and pieces of this. I just don't like the whole. But I do like, you know, I do think it's doing a good job laying groundwork. Like obviously they're setting things up, like what you say, George and Izzy are together now, which we didn't really touch on that scene outside of the hospital, other than that's like where they held hands and didn't kiss, but like they're like, we survived the day of everybody talking about us. Like, you know, that's about to be the rest of your lives. Like, people are going to be telling this story till the day they die.
Oh yeah. It's what actually got Meredith out of the show in season 19. It's this this day. I agree. I don't think it wasn't a dramatic episode for me. I just, like I said, I think you're deepening characters, and I need to feel a level of I need to be compelled. I need to feel compelled towards Meredith more. And with Lexi, I'm getting that. I need to feel compelled to George and Izzy in a different way, because now that Callie knows, like, there is, the secrecy is gone, which to me, that made that storyline a little bit interesting. So I think they added some things that make these storylines a little bit more interesting. So that for that, it's higher for me, but there was no drama. There was no drama other than the opening.
Yeah.
Like, no, I shouldn't say there's no drama. The episode itself is all very dramatic, but there was no bomb drops. So, I enjoyed it. And this is the first episode that I think that was laying groundwork that I actually enjoyed a lot.
It doesn't feel like a filler. I will say it's laying groundwork without feeling like a filler.
Exactly.
You do need it. Obviously, Han is important. She's there. Let's do predictions. You said that Alex and Ava would have sex again. What about where is George gonna live?
I think he's just going to move in with Izzy inside of, he's going to move back into
Izzy's
the house. Izzy's room. Which, gosh, it's going to be the whole, all of them. No, not Christina, not Christina and Callie. I think George is going to move in with Izzy. They say they're in love. They say, you know, when you cheat on your wife with someone, that's a pretty deep connection that I hope you better have. So I think he's going to move in with her.
Okay. Who is Derek? What is Derek going to do? Is he going to date? Who is he going to date? Is he just going to keep talking about dating people?
I don't know what he's going to do, but the last thing that I want him to do is spite date, because that's what his character looks like. It's going to do right now is he's just going to spite date and hope that it triggers Meredith into a realization, and then he's going to get mad at Meredith for not having a realization. That's what I think is going to happen, but I'm not happy that's going to happen.
I'm not happy about it. Anything with Mark? He's around.
Yeah, he's grown on me. He's had a good episode.
He offered to sleep with Callie to make her feel better. We didn't talk on that.
Which I think, I mean, he was maybe 60% joking, you know, as one does when you're a man whore, but it's okay. But I thought that was still funny, and that was true to his character, and it was true to her character to say no, and obviously she didn't do it. But I don't really have a prediction for Mark right now. I got to see what happens next episode. But right now, he's just single. But actually, you know what? No, I'm going to go bold. Callie and Mark fuck.
I think I was going to say you predicted that they were going to sleep together one more time.
Yeah.
You doubling down on that?
Doubling down.
Okay. And let's see. Anything with Bailey?
I think that her and her husband get a divorce.
Okay.
I don't know when.
Because he doesn't understand surgery.
I think that, and I was telling this to Jessica, I don't think I could ever be in a relationship with a doctor, let alone a surgeon. Mm-hmm. You can't keep your promises. Mm-hmm. And,
I think this show, I'm not saying no one's lives are like this. There are surgeons who control their schedule. You can be a surgeon who is not going to constantly be pulled into emergency surgeries. There are hospitals where you don't get taken for emergencies. This hospital, obviously, the people get taken to in emergencies, so they need to have people like who are constantly like not just scheduling. There are also surgeons who only do like elective procedures, but like that's not dramatic, so like that's not what this show is. But there it is possible. It's just not on this show possible.
Right. But I don't think, as long as we see Bailey, whenever she leaves the show, I don't know if she does leave the show. She could still be on the show, and she's one of the original characters that's still there. I don't know. But before her last day on the TV show, her and Tuck are going to get divorced.
Okay. George, Izzy, Christina, Callie, Meredith, Derek. Yeah, I think that's like all the stuff there's really to say. You said Ava's going to show up again, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. She'll show back up.
Okie dokie. Well, I think that's it, guys. Thanks so much for listening. You can find us on Instagram, Grey's Academy Pod. You can follow our individual Instagram accounts, chaotically Kelsey, carmen.gabriel.official. And you can email us at graysacademypod@gmail.com. Carmen won't see that. So if you want to talk spoilies on those, you're more than welcome to talk spoilies in those.
Spoilies.
But also, we spell spoilies different. I'm going to take a poll on Instagram to see how spoilies should be spelled, because Carmen spells it with a Y, and it should most certainly be spelled with an IE, which is how I spell it.
Do I say spoileys?
Yeah.
I'm not. It's just what came up. I'm not like, it's not like, I'm not.
Yeah. Don't defend yourself now.
I'm not going to die on that. I'm not going to die on that hill.
Carmen.
I'm willing to say.
Carmen is raging right now. Okay. He's trying to be calm, but he's like, there's smoke coming out of his ears. He's so passionate about how you spell this word.
If you want me to right now, I will change it to spoilies with an IE. I don't care. You know what? No, fuck you. EYS. Spoilies forever. I mean, no, don't send me spoilies, but it's in EYS forever.
So if you see Carmen walking down the side of the road, you can tell him how to spell spoilies, but
don't actually say spoilies. Say don't it when you're talking spoilies. It about the context of how to spell it and correctly with an EYS. But other than that, we will see you all in the next one.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.